This is Radio Superior 1945, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1945. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the lakes, station KUWS. Jack McKenna reminding you, a slip of the lip may sink a ship. It's 6 o'clock Central Standard Wartime, Thursday, August 9th, 1945. Lou Martin is in with the 6 o'clock news. Rapid Ray has sports, and we have a letter to the editor for you.
But we're a radio station. We don't have any editors for letters.
As if it matters. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Bertham's Grocery. Like everywhere else, they don't have much in the way of meat, but they do have Van Camp's baked beans, 2 jars for just 28 cents, and only 20 ration points. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. The atomic bomb has been dropped on another Japanese city. A superfortress unleashed the terrible weapon on Nagasaki today, while bombing runs were made on other Jap cities. We begin our shortwave world report from Guam.
This is Pacific Headquarters in Guam. Merlin Spencer, your correspondent. The world's most destructive force, the atomic bomb, was used for the second time against Japan. It struck the important Kyushu island city of Nagasaki. Early reports that the bombing had, quote, good results. More than one bomb may have been dropped in this second attack, and it may have been a different size than the one which was loosed on Monday, destroying 60% of Hiroshima. The carefully worded communique only said the second use of the atomic bomb had occurred. The bomb was dropped about noon Japanese time. The Japanese have had time to study the devastation at Hiroshima, where they reported practically every living thing was destroyed as the world's first mighty atom wrecked that city of 343,000 people. Nagasaki is a western seaport and railroad terminal with about 255,000 residents. It is considered a far more important military target than Hiroshima. Nagasaki had 3 Mitsubishi military plants and an electric company. Strategic Air Commander General Spatz says Nagasaki was even more vulnerable with its housing packed together. Hiroshima was one of the best laid-out cities with 3 rivers and many fire breaks, but those things did not save it. Nagasaki will give observers an opportunity to study the mighty atom's effectiveness since it has been virtually untouched by American bombing. Crewmen who dropped the mighty atom immediately flashed good results to General Spatz headquarters. The general says no other details will be made available until the mission returns. At Pacific headquarters in Guam, this is Merlin Spencer calling Hawaii. Come in, Pearl Harbor.
This is Pearl. Frank Tremaine, your correspondent. More than 1,200 U.S. Third Fleet and British carrier planes opened rocket and bomb attacks at dawn today at Japan after the Navy had contemptuously told them the day before to expect the attacks. The fleet then noisily moved into position for its daily gun practice on Japan. The return of Admiral William Bull Halsey's fleet to waters off the North Honshu Bank, the same sector where it began its Red July scourge of the enemy fleet, Air Force, and Coastal Industries, came as Admiral Chester Nimitz pledged naval support to Russians. Reporter Al Dapking, on board a warship of the fleet, says the flyers swarmed to the attack, elated by news of the devastating effect of the new atomic bomb and Russia's entry into the Pacific War. Dapking says tactical surprise was achieved and the fleet raiders caught the enemy planes before they had time to conceal them, as in past raids. They have hidden the planes in graveyards and in the backyards of homes. All this happened despite of the Navy calling the shots yesterday, warning the Japanese people boldly that Admiral Halsey was moving in again after dodging a typhoon. Admiral Nimitz also announced that a battleship and light warships shelled the former Mid-Pacific American base at Wake Island for the second time in 8 days. Wake fell on Christmas of 1941, and the fate of her defenders is not known. At Pearl Harbor, this is Frank Tremaine calling the States.
This is the nation's capital, John Hightower here. The mightiest armed forces in history completely encircled the seared and tottering Japanese islands today. They are ready to smash it into oblivion if the Japanese do not surrender in the next few hours. The Soviet Union's entry into the war unites the powers that blotted out Nazi Germany. It robs the Tokyo government of its last hope to make a stand in Asia. This shortens the war by many months, even if the Nipponese decide to fight to the death. But from the White House to the Capitol, all official Washington hopes and expects that this momentous development, along with the atomic bomb campaign, will break the back of enemy resistance at once. An intensive 24-hour propaganda campaign is directed at the Japanese people by the United States. Secretary of State James Burns told reporters, quoting now, "There is still time, but little time, for Japanese to save themselves from the destruction which threatens them." In Washington, this is John Hightower calling Russia. Come in, Moscow.
This is Soviet Russia, Eddie Gilmore reporting. Red Army troops slashed across the eastern and western frontiers of Japan's stolen Manchuria this morning, shortly after Russia's declaration of war against Japan became effective. Sharp fighting is in progress in all invaded sectors. A Tokyo broadcast dispatch monitored by Allied forces say Russian forces are battering across the eastern frontier of Manchuria at several points along a 300-mile front. A Japanese Imperial Headquarters communique says the Russian strike occurred shortly after midnight. This suggests a vast pincer movement against the crack Kwangtung Army, pride of Emperor Hirohito's forces. At the same time, the enemy communique also reports Soviet planes raiding Japanese-held targets in northern Korea and northern Manchuria in separate actions. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore.
In other war action, American forces continue mopping up northern Luzon in the Philippines, calling on General Yamashita to surrender. In Burma, the British announced 91,000 Japanese casualties in the Battle of the Sitkang River in Lower Burma. Now Jack McKenna has these words from our sponsor.
Thank you, Lou, and indeed I do have a few words for Berthiums. Six telephones they have there, my goodness. 5551 is the number to call for ordering your groceries like cottage cheese per pound, just 20 cents. Aged American cheese per pound, 39 cents. How do they do it? Listen to this, ladies. Coffee, Nash, Arco, Folger, all of them. 1 pound jar for just 31 cents. Now getting into the points that we all know something about. Apricots, just 30 points and 32 cents for a 30-ounce can. Wow. And 50 points for pineapple juice. Del Monte, fancy 18-ounce can, just 16 cents. I tell you, folks, it just doesn't end. They have lots of bargains there for you, so don't waste any time. Get in there to Berthiums Incorporated, and I thank you. Lou?
The nation's food shortage will only get worse unless all farmers are discharged from the military. That today from Republican Congressman Alvin Okonski of northern Wisconsin in a letter to President Truman. Okonski says, quoting now, "Unless farmers are discharged, there are dark days ahead for America. In my district, 2,641 farms are idle because farm boys were taken into the Army," unquote. The Navy Department released its list of casualties today, including these Upper Wisconsin men. Private Curtis Stensland of Gordon, pharmacist mate Bernard Patrick, son of Mr. and Mrs. Emery Kempton of Superior, all were wounded in action in the Pacific. Organizations of a new industry to replace the Walter Butler shipyards have been announced by Butler President Robert Butler. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has more.
Mr. Butler says the company will be called American Fibers Industries. The company was formed at a meeting at Butler's St. Paul office, which was attended by representatives of farmers serving 42 counties and five Midwestern hemp states. Mr. Butler is looking for something to replace the lost shipyard jobs in the post-war. And he says it's important to keep the hemp industry alive. But that's an uphill battle, Lou. In 1943, all 42 hemp plants were operating, but only 18 operated in 1944, and none are operating this year. This is a $60 million annual industry, providing thousands of jobs to farmers and mill workers. Hemp can be used to make heavy cloths, tarpaulins, and even sails. This kind of hemp is not intoxicating like the marijuana plants, but law enforcement say the scourge of marijuana cannot be controlled if hemp is allowed to be legally grown. Even so, in three wars, the War of 1812, World War I, and World War II, the United States has been cut off from sources of cordage, forcing it to go into emergency growing of hemp, Lou.
We'll watch developments closely. Thanks, Mike. Industrialist Henry Ford left Superior today after a two-day visit. He departed on the steamer Henry Ford II after spending a short vacation here. His last visit here was in August of 1939, when he toured the docks and shipping facilities of Superior for his auto manufacturing business. The Association of Commerce in Superior is leading an effort to create a memorial to the late Ace of Aces, Major Richard Bone. Secretary Claire Wilder says that many people are thinking on the lines of a statue or bronze plaque, but the association favors something that better represents Major Bong's life and ambition. One of the suggestions is to improve the Bong Airport in Superior, which was named after him in January. It could have more facilities to teach young people how to fly, Jack.
Hey, they've got something there.
Something practical that will also preserve his memory.
Oh, something useful, like maybe a bridge. Well, we can pool our ideas during the show. We can call it Show and Solve. Thanks, Lou Martin, the newsman, that they'll build a statue to someday. That'll make birds happy to land on. Let's check our forecast for this August 9th, 1945. Cloudy tonight with a chance of thunder boomers. Tonight's low will be 68 degrees with a high tomorrow of 83. And it's music time. Kick it off with Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra with Well, Get It on Martin and McKenna. STD and, well, get it on station KUWS, and they got it. Hey, folks, there's some great fun going on tonight and tomorrow at the Superior Theater. It's a double feature. Man, I love those double features as long as they have double popcorn. First, there's Manpower, starring Edward G. Robinson, Marlena Dietrich, and George Raft. Then see the thrilling suspense film, When Strangers Marry. Don't they always? Starring Dean Jager, Kim Hunter, and newcomer Bob Mitchum. Tickets just 35 cents for adults, 12 cents for the kids, tax included. That's a double feature at the Superior Theater, 2201 East 5th Street. Hey, we've got a letter to the editor coming in next.
Even though we don't have an editor and we're not a newspaper.
Picky, picky. Let's enjoy this favorite from the 1944 hit parade. This is Pied Pipers with Dream on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Dream.
Pied Pipers with Dream on station KUWS.
Let me introduce Mrs. O.O. Gradeen of Superior.
Her first name is O.O.?
Who is, for some reason, submitting a letter to the editor to us. Kind of you to stop by, Mrs. Gradeen.
Oh, Jack, you're so humorous. It's not O.O. as in here comes trouble. It's O.O., the more formal introduction using my husband's name, Oscar Olaf. And Lou, really now, the radio is the modern way to get out opinions in the community. As an active member of the Superior Garden Club, I know. All the girls listen to your news. We have the highest regard for your integrity.
You know, reading a letter to the editor over the radio is a great idea. We should do this more often.
Boy, are you a pushover.
Wednesday was one of the saddest days in the history of our fair community. As we have so many times in the past 4 years of war, we have buried another of our sons. Dick Bong was one of us. He went to school here, to church, and ball games. And because God gave him greatness and abilities and courage bestowed on few men, Richard Ira Bong became a symbol to American airmen the world over. Dick's influence is more than we in our hometown here can comprehend. But we can never forget this plain, simple, glorious fact. Dick and his deeds in fighting this terrible war represents in our hearts the sacrifices of every Poplar and Superior son and daughter who have traveled beyond our realm to bring honor and security to America.
Wonderful. Insightful, Mrs. Gradine.
So, when we think of a fitting memorial to Dick Bong, let's set our eyes higher than we usually do in Superior. Let's not think of a cold marble statue on the courthouse lawn. Let's make our memorial a living one, one that is warm and a fitting one to the greatness he stands for. Maybe a permanent building for servicemen to come and relax. Maybe, yes. Maybe a playground and center where youth can recreate, or a modern hospital, or an endowed fund to help those orphaned by this war. Think big, Superior. Think Superior.
Wow.
Thank you, Mrs. O.O. Gradine of Superior. Very dramatic for a letter to the editor.
The Garden Club can plant a few ideas as well as flowers.
On with the music, friends. Here's Johnny Mercer and Candy, as only he can sing it, on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Candy, I call my sugar candy,
because I'm sweet on candy, and candy's sweet on me. And candy's always handy
when I need sympathy.
I wish that there were four of her, so I could love much more of her.
She has taken my
got a sweet tooth for my sweetheart Candy.
It's gonna be just dandy
the day I take my Candy and make her mine, all mine.
Johnny Mercer and Joe Stafford with the Pied Pipers and Candy on Station KUWS. Let's get to the sports. Hi, Ray.
Hiya, Jake, and hiya, fans of the sporting world. Baseball Commissioner Senator A.B. Happy Chandler says he's confident the World Series will be played this year. He says Naval Secretary Forrestal wants the winner to visit bases in the Pacific for our boys who are over there. How about those bums of Brooklyn? They may catch the Cubs of Chicago yet. Dixie Walker socked a homer to beat pitcher Vern Kennedy, and the Reds of Cincy won to zip. And today, fans, the Green Bay Packers opened their training camp for another big year. Green Bay might be the David among Goliaths because they hail from such a small town of 46,000 people. But heckfire, since they started with the National Football League in 1921, the Packers are the most consistent winners in all of football. The Packers and the Chicago Cardinals are the only teams to represent one city. And the Pack and the Chicago Bears are tied for most championships. Curly Lambeau's boys will play their first exhibition game in 3 weeks at Chicago's Soldier Field against the College All-Stars. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Jake?
You were almost as dramatic as that Garden Club lady.
Boy, she was something else.
I think she scared Lou.
Well, that would be a new low point in that guy's checkered life, being scared of a Garden Club lady.
Hey, I don't care if you are the county draft board chairman. You can't come in here and question my character.
Jeez, what's gotten into McMartin there, McCorkle? I mean, I've been questioning the character of both you idiots for years, and he hasn't gotten miffed about it yet. I mean, don't take it personally, McMartin, but
It's been a tough week for the old newsman, Colonel.
What do you mean, don't take it personally? How about you? You always just barge right in, take charge of a situation. That was fine until you took charge.
You know, the old Colonel, that's just the way I am. I'm a take-charge kind of guy, but hey, you know, I didn't mean, you know, I mean, the whole checkered life and character thing. I didn't mean to, you know, upset you, McMartin.
The name's Martin. Lou Martin. It's time you remember it.
Yeah, you know, the colonel isn't very good with names and better at rank. But look, man, we're here to talk about how to honor our great local hero. It's what do they call a therapeutical, and it's we all try to deal with the sorrow of his death, and well, anyhow, to honor a great Republican.
How do you know that Major Bong was a Republican?
That would mean he was a Democrat, and that's just plain silly. All heroes are Republicans, just like the Colonel.
President Truman would disagree. We'll be back with some ideas for the best way to remember Dick Bong. But first, from the 1945 hit parade, here's the Harry James Orchestra with Helen Forrest and I Don't Want to Walk Without You on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Thank you.
Harry James and his orchestra with Helen Forrest and I Don't Want to Walk Without You on Station KUWS. All right, Ray, you go first. What's the best way to honor the memory of our own Ace of Aces?
Oh, that's easy. Rename Municipal Stadium Dick Bong Park. He loved baseball. It's a place where families get together, and it'll be a good way for people to hear his name to remember him.
Yeah, and it's time we start naming things after something or somebody. I mean, we've got East and Central High, City Hall, the courthouse. None of these have names that mean anything. And McKenna is available. Good idea, Ray.
Maybe they'll name the jail after you.
My turn. I think that we should
wait your turn, mister. It's Lou's turn.
Maybe you should make a stamp for him. The U.S. Postal Service would mint a Richard Bong stamp, and people all over the country will see his face on a letter.
Preferably an airmail stamp.
Stamp? Stamp? What kind of lily-livered idea is that for a war hero? Stamp?
It's a good idea. People collect stamps and save them forever. Kids collect them. Don't poo-poo my idea.
Well, first of all, the colonel doesn't poo-poo. Real men don't poo-poo. I don't even like saying poo-poo.
I like Lou's idea. It would be one of many ways to honor Major Bong. Okay, Colonel, let's hear your idea.
All right, men. We need a place that's quiet, serene. A place where a person can get away and be alone with his own thoughts.
Well, that would mean you couldn't be there.
Well, that's kind of cute, McCorkle. That's cute, but I'm serious here. Name a forest after the guy. A place of repose, contemplation, reflection. Think of it. What a perfect living honor for a great Republican war hero.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Pretty original, too.
I hate it when Colonel Raffaele has a good idea, but that is a good plan. How about you, Jack?
Name a bridge after him.
Oh, instead of the generic-sounding Interstate Bridge, it could be the Richard Bong Bridge. Hey, that's great, Jake.
There's been all this talk of building a toll-free high bridge. That's one that should get his name. And people will use it and say his name every day for a century to come. It's a great way for us to never forget him.
As long as some congressman doesn't come along and get it named after himself.
You know what? We're all a bunch of geniuses here. This is good stuff. The colonel approves. Now, men, let's get out there and make it happen. And that's an order.
Please, would be nice once in a while.
You heard the colonel. It's time to go. Stay tuned now, for Now It Can Be Told, and Agatha Christie's Mysteries, followed by Real Stories from Real Life. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and we geniuses aren't drafted by the local college. For Lou Martin and Ray Paulson, this is Jack McKenna reminding you that war bonds mean freedom.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1945, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Tom Martinson, Joel Anderson, Joey Laporte. All events reported on Radio Superior 1945 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.